Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
I'm in time for KER Politics. Got a good show in mind for you. You know, a lot of very interesting things have happened, I have to say, here in this last week. We're going to start out talking about the economy right now, because the Federal Reserve came out yesterday and said, you know, we're going to have a major recession this year. They officially projected that. Jim and I talked about that off mic, and we feel that's going to be due almost entirely to significant inflation. What else did you come up with, Jim?
Well, we also know that the banking industry has had a very difficult time because of the Silicon Valley Bank and the Signature Bank's folding, and of course the bank in Arizona and other banks, because they had held long-term bonds, and the rates, the values of those bonds, they thought as safe securities, but as inflation rises and the Fed increases interest rates, those bonds become less than market value.
Right.
So their books look like they have less equity on them. And of course, the Fed has come out. They came out and said that, yes, indeed, it looks like that we'll be in recession later this year. I question whether or not haven't been in a recession for quite a while now, but the Atlanta Fed had predicted a 2.2, I believe, percent growth for the first quarter of this year. And the Fed overall is predicting a 0.4 growth rate. And when you have, you know, 0.4 percentage rate, but you have a 2.2 percentage rate, that means the next couple of quarters look pretty disturbing from their projections.
You know, I got to tell you, Jim, what I think is quite frankly the biggest rat, for lack of better terms, in the wood file is the fact that the administration is doing absolutely nothing about strengthening the dollar. And that's projected right now by the pundits to turn out to be a very much weaker dollar, obviously, a very much weaker American economy, perception-wise, anyway. And they are saying, you know, if the dollar loses its status, which I agree with, as a reserve currency, unless, say, China takes over, which would be the logical extension, that will be almost as serious, if not as serious, as the United States losing a major military conflict. How do you feel about that, Jim?
No, I agree completely.
Yeah.
You know, right now we're seeing different countries accept the yuan, the Chinese currency, in exchange for energy. We are seeing numerous countries being concerned about the viability of the dollar and the U.S. economy, and they're very concerned about overall U.S. policy. So that pushback means that our economic possibilities and our economic growth will be diminished in the future.
Significantly
and when you,
diminished.
Pardon me?
Significantly diminished.
Absolutely. And when you look at, so right now, because of the massive expenditures during COVID and post-COVID with this administration, the Biden regime, we've had inflation, and now even the latest numbers, core inflation, is still up over 5%. Overall inflation rose 0.1% in March with seasonal adjustments. This is a continuation of inflation. It hasn't gone away. They're not solving the problem. As the Fed and, of course, the Treasury and the administration said a year and a half ago that this would be a transitory problem, they failed to take proper action early. At the same time, you've got policy decisions by this administration that undermine U.S. energy independence, which changes the input, which obviously has an impact on overall inflation, because, you know, the less energy, fuel, petroleum products that are out on the market means the prices go up. And of course, that enriches many of our, you know, questionable allies, if not our enemies. Obviously, Russia right now is still doing well with energy sales. So across the board, the policies from this administration are actually failing to do anything to protect the long-term economic interests of the United States and the United States people.
Yeah. Well, what's really scaring me right now, number one, is I was very concerned about the national debt way back in the late 90s, 98, 99. And I figured that that was going to decrease the value of the dollar significantly, number one, and that that was going to be one of the causative factors for a rather significant downturn in the economy. It turned out I was right. Look at what happened in 2008, 2009. Huge, huge problem. I remember lying in bed one night thinking about the business, and I was thinking, my gosh, if this keeps going on, I may have to become a bus driver or what have you. As it turned out, we got our way out of it. But I'll tell you, the stock market, I remember, because I was pretty crazy invested into it, really had some downward momentum in 2008, 2009. And I really was personally believe that that was due to a very large extent due from the perception of the U.S. dollar. It stunk. It stunk back in those days.
Well, I think it was a problem. I think also we know the massive loans that were made. And of course, the ultimate reason for that collapse was the subprime mortgage lending issue. And of course, what I see now that's kind of building, there's a similar problem with mark-to-market value, where the banks require, the Fed requires, and the Security and Exchange Commission, the different agencies that oversee regulatory actions in the banking industry, they require a certain amount of capital, liquid capital. And when those numbers get below, they have to sell assets. When they don't have enough liquidity, they've got to sell their assets. And if the assets are below value, which is these long-term bonds that SVB, the Silicon Valley Bank, invested in, are too low, and they flood the market, there's nothing. You know, it's the exact same scenario that with the subprime mortgage bundling of those mortgages back in the 2008, 2009. It's just a different measure. And of course, with increased inflation, the Fed is very concerned about the inflation levels. So they're going to continue to raise, maybe slow down, but raise the rates. But it doesn't look like they've got the tools to actually respond to the problem that is facing so many big banks. And of course, the dollar is a part of the issue, but you got to remember, Al, when we increase the interest rates, the value of the dollar goes up. The problem is we're not manufacturing. You know, these are really core issues. We're not manufacturing. We're not selling goods overseas. We have moved into a tech and service industry. Right. And what you're seeing with the tech and service industry is it's becoming globalized, and the U.S. doesn't get gain or benefit from that anymore. And of course, the Chinese and other European and Asian countries are actually advancing very rapidly. So ultimately, it's a bad set of policies right now to fail to push U.S. manufacturing products for sales overseas to strengthen our economic output of energy and become less dependent on foreign sources to drop some of those inflation numbers down and actually get back to business where we're producing food rather than hoping for globalization to balance the system. And that's where we're failing miserably right now.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the concept of mark to market, maybe I should say the fact about mark-to-market is something a lot of people don't understand. And that was actually back around 2010, which absolutely killed the banking industry, because real estate values, where many banks were incredibly over-invested in, mark-to-market came in and their balance sheets just went to hell. And that was just, unfortunately, a bad thing that happened. And I would maintain the same thing could happen today. You guys stick around. We got to take a real quick break. We got to be right back.
You
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
I've got a few comments here, just general comments I want to make about a comment I made yesterday on a daily editorial, yesterday being actually Wednesday on a daily editorial. I made the comment that it might be pretty difficult for me to support the candidacy of Donald Trump. I want to say why I'm saying that. I know that Jimmy is diametrically opposed to my thoughts about that, but I'd like you to just think about this a little bit. I'm not opposing the man. This is way out. Trump's personality is very forceful. He's a very bright individual. He absolutely insists on being the prettiest baby in the nursery, for lack of better terms. It's kind of a crude way to put it, but my opinion about the President of the United States is he has to be not necessarily popular, but he has to be very, very supported. I don't think Donald Trump can get the support that's necessary to get this country out of the doldrums that it's in. Now, having said that, I also want to say I feel exactly the same way about Joe Biden. I don't think Joe Biden is even close to being an effective president of the United States. And I have to wonder, in 24, who are the Democrats going to run? I'm sure that Donald Trump will have the Republican nomination. And the more I learn about the man, and if he can garner perhaps a larger amount of support, then I certainly would support him. Jimmy, any comments on what I've said?
Well, I think Donald Trump has actually increased his support from the time that he first came into power in 2016. That's factual. In 2016, he got about 63 million votes.
Yeah.
In 2020, he got, according to the questionable outcome of the election, about 75 or 76 million votes. That's a pretty significant increase. And in fact, up to that point, it was the largest number of votes, with the exception of what happened with Joe Biden, that anybody had ever gotten in our history.
Yeah.
So his support had grown significantly. There was a tremendous amount of frustration over COVID. And of course, there was some mistakes made with the Trump administration on personnel selections.
Yep.
That undermined, that absolutely, and these are Republicans that were appointed into positions that undermined the Trump presidency significantly, while simultaneously having a full-on assault to all of our legal systems from the Democratic Party through the two impeachment processes, through the Russian collusion narrative, through a massive media effort to undermine him. They attacked him on a daily basis with often fraudulent information and skewed information. So what the question is, and your point, are there more people supporting Donald Trump today than there were before? And I would argue, with what the government has done, what the Biden administration has done, to use him and to attack him as a scapegoat for, basically to intimidate the entire conservative population of this nation, that he will gain in support, and very, very many independents who are frustrated with what's gone on in Washington are going to support him if he can make clear that he will change the personnel decisions that would continue to support his very aggressive America First candidacy. What we saw in the Trump administration the first time in 2016 to 2020 was a very large number of individuals who were globalists that were advising him,
right,
or that were on his cabinet, that were directly undermining his goals and objectives while simultaneously being attacked by the left nonstop. And in fact, some Republicans assisted in Democrats' efforts for their own power purposes. So I believe that more Americans are beginning to wake up to the corruption thanks to Joe Biden and what has happened in Washington, D.C. over the last few years. And this should be a massive, massive victory for conservatism. And it isn't necessarily because they support Trump, but they are very much against what's happening in Washington and attacking a free speech, of silencing people on the street, of supporting these transgender ideologies, of supporting these social constructs that are really undermining children and families. I think there's going to be a massive pushback.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. When you talk about the transgender operations, which I have to say I am violently, the way they are organized and the way the choices are made as to who's going to switch their sexuality, for lack of better terms, I know that the liberals are saying, you know, people can do whatever they want to do. God gave us free will, et cetera, although I don't think they bring in the word God. But having said that, I really have to wonder if that is an issue that should be even close to paramount in the decision-making for where you're going to cast your vote for president.
Oh, I think it's absolutely one of the essential elements of why you would cast your votes, because what it does, this entire movement from the left takes away parents' choice and parents' responsibility and makes children basically a ward of the state. When you do that, you're separating the youth from the elder, from the population, and that's exactly what Mao did during the Cultural Revolution, which created such destruction in China. So you're seeing a Marxist ideology attempting to separate children through education and ideology.
I very well remember that, yes.
So that's a very dangerous signal of what's happening in America right now. So I think it's a key element, and it is proven to be so in both Florida and Virginia with the election of Glenn Youngkin as the Virginia governor, and of course DeSantis' massive victory when they stood up for parents' rights.
Yeah.
Because it is not the state that should be controlling the future of our children, right? And they should not be controlling our voices or what we say.
Right.
They should not be censoring opposition. They should not be involved in using the state to influence and silence their political opponents. And these issues, I think, are very important. And this transgender issue, I think, is symbolic of a very small group of people that have way too much influence over the power of the government right now in the executive branch. So I think it's a huge pushback point.
So you're saying the government itself, the executive branch itself, is not supporting that particular movement. Is that correct, Jimmy?
No. I'm saying the government is supporting that movement and has made it very public that they're supporting that movement, both through spokespeople and the president's statements.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's going to be a critical and essential element of the next 2024 election.
Well, I think it will, and that's one of the things I will definitely be watching. Ladies and gentlemen, I bet you will too. Be curious to see how you guys think about that. Should that be a major issue in deciding who the next president is? We'll see.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back. Top of the hour news is now done. So we're continuing on with our discussion a little bit about the demographics of the voters in America, because that really is an important topic. Since in the last segment, I devoted my thoughts to why I don't think Trump is the best individual to be the Republican nominee for president. Let's go on in that direction and let's say, what are the demographics right now of Trump's support? From what I would see, I would say is primarily massive blue collar. And that's good for Trump because massive blue collar is a very big number. And the negative feelings right now, I have noticed through my reading and, you know, television watching, et cetera, I have noticed that the animosity on the part of most blue-collar Republicans is really, really meaningfully large. Could be wrong about that. Jimmy, let's talk about the demographics about the Republicans right now. Can they get together and support Trump, or do they have the inclination to get together and support Trump?
Well, okay, so you have to look at the Democratic Party pre-Trump, so before 2015. The Republican Party.
I agree.
Yeah, you've got to look back then and look what's been happening since then. So the Republican Party pre-Trump was very much a elitist group that was focused, you know, it's country club Republicans, right? They, you know, membership only, exclusive ideologies, and it was always about taxes,
right,
and it was about free markets, and it was about basically neoconservative views of we can export democracy in order to have a global world. This is the entire like Mitch McConnell view, or even Mitt Romney view, that, you know, an open free market for the world will be better for everybody. Let's cut our taxes and we'll help make the world a better place by free market and trade.
Well, I would say Trump's main appeal comes from the fact that he really believes, I mean, it sounds funny, but to me it's very, very serious. It sounds to me like he wants to put the country on the world stage as it was back in, let's say, the 40s or 50s.
Okay? Yeah, he does. And see, that's what I wanted to express here with the Republican Party view predominantly before Trump. And the established Republicans were very much against Trump. But once he won the nomination, they had no choice, right? Then it was, all right, we can't just... Some of them did try to undermine it, but we can't just undermine it. We've got to win the White House back, but we still want to control things from behind the scenes. And that's what you saw happen. You had globalist ideologues, Republicans, undermining the Trump administration. There's a great book by Peter Navarro, who was right, you know, an advisor both on China and economics, and he was right, an economics professor. He talks about the inside of the Trump White House and the mistakes that were made with personnel hiring. So basically, you had a lot of those country club Republicans that still had an idea, a globalist idea, and really didn't support Trump and undermined him continually. Rex Tillerson at Secretary of State, probably Mattis as Secretary of Defense, certainly his National Security Advisor after they axed Michael Flynn. They were globalists in view, and they had that old school Republican ideology. And of course, that was in competition with people that were protecting the whole sanctity of D.C. And Trump was against what was happening in D.C. So the demographics, when you go back to the question, what are the demographics? Who supports Trump now? They're the people that are very frustrated with the old Republican Party. Those are Republicans. And Democrats that were frustrated with all of government and certainly lost their jobs because of globalization that was actually driven by Republicans in the past.
Okay.
And at that same time, you've got independents that are just fed up with everything.
Yeah.
So there's three groups that I see. It's Republicans, which are growing in numbers, that cannot stand the way the Republican Party used to be. There are still holdouts. There are still a small amount, but they're getting less powerful. You've got Democrats that are very frustrated, that are the blue-collar workers that you're talking about, the actual Democrats that lost jobs because of offshoring U.S. manufacturing, the ones that wanted to build aluminum and cars here in the U.S., they're frustrated. And then you've got the independents that can't stand anything that's going on. And those numbers are actually growing, especially as you see the tech companies and the big corporations control the entire economic landscape of the United States to the detriment of U.S. workers.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I don't understand, you know, is you look, for example, at Silicon Valley Bank that just failed here recently. That is an incredibly, incredibly dramatic event that really people ought to stop and think about. Bank failures, particularly of the magnitude of say Citizens Valley Bank are not, that's not a common event. That's event that, that's an event that tells you a little bit about where our society is headed, you know, fiscally. Well, that should scare an awful lot of people. That should make people stop and think. And the thought pattern, I would think, should go probably in the direction of what's really causing this. Well, banks fail basically because people lose confidence in them. I am amazed that more people aren't losing confidence in the federal government right now, given what's going on in our society. You know, the conversations that we have around here about our society really center around violence. A lady who I'm getting pretty close to is petrified to leave, for example, the confines of my little society here. She is really, really concerned about gun violence, about people getting killed on the streets in Seattle, etc., etc. If you combine that with what happened at Silicon Valley Bank, which was really, really an amazing event, you'd have to say that how the hell could the Democrats even think about winning the executive office again? I really wonder myself how that could happen. And what I'm saying about Trump is, if he had the kind of personality where he could view him, where he could, I should say, position himself basically as the true savior of America as it used to be. I haven't seen him do that, Jim. All I've seen is a very defensive man.
Well, I disagree with you, because that's been his campaign from the beginning. Make America great again,
right,
and save America. So that has been the essence of everything he's run on. And the problem is he's fighting a very powerful institutional system,
right,
that is funded massively by major corporations, by globalist ideologies, and a lot of these companies and tech companies that are controlling information. That makes it almost impossible. So your perceptions of Donald Trump are basically what most people's are, and that's shaped by what the media presents. The media is presenting a false narrative in spite of his own weaknesses. And I've never thought that Trump is the greatest guy in the world. But what I do think is that he represents and has the courage to stand up against exactly what most people are frustrated with. And that's why I see the potential for significant change in 2024 if people can stay together and not undermine, because there's really no other options right now,
right,
that we can see in either direction.
I agree 100% on that, and I agree 100% also if the Democratic Party could position Trump in that area that you just described, I think he'd win the election hands down. Here to wrap up KER Politics. It's been a good show, and it's really been fun to put together. Call it. I cannot tell you how concerned I am about the fact that the dollar is probably going to lose its reserve currency status. That's going to affect the perception of America on an international level. Particularly after some of the drops that are going on right now in some of the indicators in the United States. And I simply don't understand why, as the pundits say, the administration is currently doing nothing about the strength of the U.S. dollar. It loses its reserve currency status, and we're done, as I said. Not done, but it's really going to be bad.
There'll be a long-term decline of our economic output. We will be surpassed by 2030 by the Chinese economy. Already, purchasing power, Chinese economy has actually beat us since 20, 2013, over 10 years ago.
Right.
But when it comes to actual, you know, GDP and performance, it's inevitable that if things go on the track they're going right now, the U.S. will be financially subservient, militarily subservient, and of course, diplomatically and information subservient to authoritarian leaders. And of course, we have no real help out there because there's very few people in foreign policy circles right now that can trust the Biden administration. And I think a lot of influence over the administration is from globalists,
yep.
corporations that no longer yep. care about where the U.S. stands. And unfortunately, that would be very devastating to the U.S. population.
Well, you know, I know that some of our bloggers laugh at me when I say, you know, the key to this whole thing is to get out and vote. But I got to tell you, the only people who can solve this problem happen to be the electorate. And the reason I say that, Jimmy, is because Biden, left to his own method of thinking, is going to be absolutely worthless as a president. So he's going to, the only way to save our country, I believe, is to vote him out of office. And I mean, that's the only way to do it.
Well, it has to be overwhelming because of the influence,
yeah.
the influence and the, you know, the amount of money that goes into these elections now. And that influence is bought and paid for by yeah. major corporations. You know, remember in the, you know, under the Obama administration, the 99%ers, you know, the big protests,
yeah.
which were strongly against corporate, you know, control of our government, the World Economic Forum, World Trade Organization protests whenever they, you know, were happening around the world.
Right.
Well, what happened was a lot of the boards, a lot of the oversight boards for those corporations started saying, well, let's buy into the and influence these progressive ideologues that hate capitalism. And so they've actually co-opted them. And to where now you see these progressive agendas being supported by major corporations because they don't want to offend based on what happened a decade ago and the pushback against them. And of course, the other problem is so many of the corporations don't look at the basic principles that gave them the, you know, the capital to actually be successful.
Yeah.
So it's, and they're hiring crazy people. Anheuser-Busch hired this woman who has made the decision apparently to do the transgender advertising campaign with Bud Light. That is absolutely catastrophic for their marketing right now.
Yep.
And they're having to scramble how to deal with it and not offend the left at the same time, get back their market share.
Yep.
So these are very interesting dynamics. And I think it really does go back to corporate corporate oversight being intimidated by administration for diversity, equity, inclusion, and being fearful of the pushback from these really anarchical anti-capitalist Marxists. Yeah.
Well, the one comment I would make is it could turn out that the elephant being unable to go through the eye of a needle could be the elephant, could be the housing market. And going through the needle basically is the key to our economic success and the key to increasing the confidence in our economy, it very possibly may not happen. I mean, already, Jimmy, in your part of the U.S., you know, of what, 4 or 5 years ago, real estate prices are down probably in the neighborhood of 10 to 20%.
Well, actually out here where we are in South Carolina, could people continue to come into a red state?
Yeah.
So the prices here are not bad. But when you look at other big urban areas, those prices are beginning to decline quite a
sure.
bit. The number of sales is way down. So that's a bad omen for the future.
Now,
and of course,
is that a new part of the country? Amount of sales are way down.
Sales are down. That's the pricing has dropped about 8 to 10%, but
okay.
the actual sales have dropped more like in the 15 to 20% because people aren't putting their homes on the market and people are not buying because the interest rates now have priced many people out of the market. So that's one problem. But I think it actually begins back with the energy problem. You know, the administration, the Biden administration's efforts to push towards green energy that is not viable economically, and it undermines U.S. independence. And of course, it also doesn't help the environment at all, because when we stop producing manufacturing goods here in the United States, when we cut back on our energy, domestic energy production, that moves overseas.
Yep.
And overseas, the Chinese do not have the same environmental regulations that we have for manufacturing.
Not even close.
Yeah. So you're actually increasing the negativity of carbon, or the impact of carbon, when you try to shut down industries in the United States. So it makes me, and this has been pretty clear, but it makes me question, what is the real agenda behind these people that are pushing, you know, this green energy policy in the United States?
Well, I'm gonna pour a little gasoline on the fire that you on the situation that you just mentioned. When Trump was interviewed by Fox, which is, by the way, kind of an interesting interview, he is convinced that the United States basically blew up that portion of the pipeline, and he said, "I'm not going to tell her. I'm not going to make that one of my campaign issues," because he said that's a very, very bad thing for the United States. Because here you've got the president pushing this green energy thing, and the amount of bad stuff that went into the atmosphere as a result of that explosion, they showed pictures of it actually, is astronomically high. Why did the Biden administration, if they did it, what's their rationale? I don't get it, Jimmy. We got a minute.
Yeah, no, I think the rationale behind that action was to punish Russia and to keep the Germans from actually helping subsidize the Russian war. Now, if that was the policy, if that's what they did, that's the reason behind it. There's even bigger issues, though, with this entire agenda.
Yeah.
You can't produce enough wind and solar energy to fill the gap with fossil fuels.
Yeah.
You cannot build enough electric vehicle batteries with no rare earth metals, cobalt, lithium, that the Chinese control the vast majority on the planet right now. You can't build that type of capability unless you're dependent upon Chinese manufacturing.
Right.
Once again, this all goes back to, what the heck are these people thinking? And I think it's a combination of insidious nature and a number of people that are absolutely incompetent running major.
And they are very desperately simply trying to gain power, which is crazy. We're talking about that at breakfast this morning. That's exactly the conclusion that I and some other people came to. Absolutely ridiculous. Jimmy, I know you're in a hurry. Congratulations on your new position at the university. Jimmy's on his way right now to Clemson University to start taking part in his new position back there, which is being on the board of directors of the Parent Advisory Department. Way to go, Jim.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.